dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else. The afterworld. A world of never-ending happiness. You can always see the sun. Day or night. So when you call up that shrink in Beverly Hills, you know the one.
Doctor, everything will be alright.
Instead of asking him how much of your time is left, ask him how much of your mind, baby. Cause in this life, things are much harder than in the afterworld. This life, you're on your own. And if the elevator tries to break you down,
welcome to WGXC 90.7 Acra Hudson Catskill and this month's edition of The Score, where we listen to and discuss film and television soundtracks and scores. I am Lisa Thomas.
And I am Margot Pelletier.
And we are your hosts. At the top of the show, you heard the song Let's Go Crazy, music by Prince from the 1984 film soundtrack Purple Rain.
Purple Rain was released 20 years ago, but the music within the film is often regarded as the greatest soundtrack of all time, and certainly was one of the most original soundtracks from the 80s. In fact, Rolling Stones ranked the soundtrack for Purple Rain as the second best album of the 80s, just behind Michael Jackson's Thriller. While the film had mixed reviews, the album was regarded as a musical breakthrough for Prince and made him an international star. Despite the tepid reviews from the film critics, the film pulled in $68 million, which is all the more remarkable considering it only cost $7 million to produce.
Yes, and I think in that summer of 84, it broke all these records, and Ghostbusters was supposed to be the big summer hit, and Purple Rain came out of nowhere, because you have to remember that Prince, prior to this, was not really a big deal. And so it really, really catapulted him into international stardom. So we have another track from that soundtrack, and so enjoy.
Thank you.
You just heard Take Me With You from the 1984 film soundtrack Purple Rain by Prince. The soundtrack for Purple Rain spent 24 weeks at number one on the Billboard charts. By mid-1984, Prince was as hot as Bruce Springsteen, who released Born in the USA that same summer. It was his sixth studio album for Prince, but it was the first album that he produced with his new group, The Revolution.
Right, and Prince was very interested in the image of the group, and he very intentionally hand-selected the musicians, not just for their skill, but also for their various backgrounds, kind of in the vein of Sly and the Family Stone. He wanted his group to convey an androgynous and sexy rocker image, which, of course, it did. This next track is entitled The Beautiful Ones. It was the third track recorded for the album at Sunset Sound in Los Angeles. The song is a haunting musical tale of emotional longing and unrequited love.
Baby, that Yes, Lisa. Is the water warm enough? Yes, Lisa. Shall we begin? Yes, Lisa.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to this month's edition of The Score, where we just played The Beautiful Ones, followed by Computer Blue from the 1984 film soundtrack, Purple Rain. How about that for a way to wake you up on Sunday morning here in the Hudson Valley?
If you were a teen in the 1980s, odds are you'll remember the next racy track as the one that sent Tipper Gore into an absolute frenzy. She was so up in arms, in fact, that she founded the Parents Music Resource Center, which is the organization that eventually led to the parental advisory stickers on the CDs and the album covers. The track we're referring to, of course, is none other than Darling Nikki.
Thank you. junkie, I guess you could say she was a sex fiend. I met her in a hotel lobby, masturbating with a magazine. She said, how'd you like to waste some time? And I could not resist when I saw little Nikki grind. So many devices, everything that money could buy. She said, sign your name on a dotted line. The lights went out and Nikki started to grind. Nikki. Castle started spinning. Oh, maybe it was my brain. I can't tell you. All over, all I found was a phone number on the stairs. It said, thank you for a funky time. Call me up whenever you wanna grind. Yeah. Oh. Come back, Nikki, come back.
Darling Nikki, followed by When Doves Cry, composed by Prince for the soundtrack to Purple Rain. When Doves Cry was Prince's first number one single and was voted as the best single of 1984 in the Village Voice. Aside from singing the vocals, Prince recorded all the instruments on the track himself.
Yes, that's true. Prince could play many instruments. He played the bass. He played lead guitar. He played drums. He had an enormous elastic vocal range.
He played the piano.
And he played the piano. And even when he formed his band, The Revolution, he would go over to the bass player, pick up the bass, and say, no, no, no. You know, I want you to play the line like this. And with the keyboard, he might do the same, etc.
When there was a bass line. He was known for taking bass lines out of his tracks. After they recorded them, he would say, you know what? I'm going to actually pull this bass line, which is what he did in that last song, When Doves Cry, which kind of made the industry up in arms. They were like, how could you release this track without the bass line, right?
Right. But if you look at all the arts in the 80s, just upon the advent of the computer age, even in the painting world, for example, things went from being very material, you know, being made out of minerals. The pigments were made out of minerals. There was a heaviness and a materiality to the artwork. Then it started to get more ethereal, you know, where things would get lighter. Artists were projecting slides and then painting from that, which gave it an airiness. But also with the digital age, artists were actually making work out of light. So I think and that also caused a stir in the art world. People couldn't accept that things weren't, in a physical sense, grounded. And I think that's part of what happened. I wanted people to know that in the industry, not only was he called a very innovative songwriter, but people referred to him sometimes as a band leader. And that did have to do with the fact that he could pick up all these different instruments and write parts for them.
Yeah, he was actually, I think, quite a prodigy as a young boy. You know, he could play many instruments at a very young age. And I think he recorded his first album at like 15 or 16. He was signed very young anyway. So while this was his sixth studio album, he wasn't really that old when it came out. He'd already produced five other albums before this. So that's something to keep in mind.
Right. You know, let me just give you an example of what one of his managers said. His tour manager, Alan Leeds, who actually worked with Prince from 83 to 89, I want to kind of paraphrase something he said. He said, when the single, When Doves Cry, was released, it actually just raced up the charts. And it didn't matter if Prince was singing about doves or if he was singing to birds or whatever. It didn't matter. What he had created within this song was so unbelievably groundbreaking that other musicians felt like they had to go back to the garages, back to the woodsheds, and rehearse all over again, because the actual vocabulary of how to create a song had been changed.
Well, let's hear some more of his groundbreaking work from the soundtrack to Purple Rain. You just heard I Would Die For You, followed by I'm a Star by Prince, from the soundtrack to Purple Rain. Now, some of you may not know this, but Purple Rain was actually a semi-autobiographical film about his sort of troubled beginnings as a musician growing up in Minneapolis and some of the troubles that he had at home, I guess, with his parents who were fighting and things of this nature. And it's hard to know kind of like how much is really true and based on his real life, but they had all these other musicians that were musicians like Morris Day, who was his nemesis in the film. And a lot of what's really interesting about the film, I found, was that a lot of the people within the film were actually playing themselves, right? Not the parents, and not Prince, who was known as the kid, and his like love interest Apollina, but all the other people, like all the other band members' names were really their names in real life. Wendy was really Wendy, Lisa was really Lisa, Morris Day was really Morris Day.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. Like, I don't know how many people do that, but and in terms of like, I was reading a little bit about the backstory of how this film came out, and you know, Prince was obviously very, very heavily involved in the direction of the film, but it was the only film that he worked on that he didn't actually direct, and he brought in some other screenwriters and people to work with him and collaborate. And I think the process was kind of, you know, a very new one for him. And a little bit laborious. It sounded like there was a lot of things that were being filmed, like live shows that were being filmed that then were incorporated into the movie, and nobody really knew at the time. Like the extras and things didn't really know they were going to be involved in a, like a movie set, because they didn't really know it was going to make the movie. Like a lot of really strange you know, ways of how they put this together, but it really, really did come together. And another thing, little tidbit that you might not know, was that Jennifer Beals was almost cast as the female lead in the film after her big Flashdance thing. But, you know, she turned it down because she wanted to finish college. So imagine that. And in the end, the part went to Patricia Cotero. Now, Margo was pointing this out to me last night, and it's pretty funny, but it just kind of proves how much of an impression Prince had on me in the 80s. If you can catch some of those early Facebook photos of me online, I have my own version of Prince's curls and, of course, that great black eyeliner, which I, you know, wore a lot of in the 80s. But, yeah, he definitely had, like, a very fashion sense, and you know, a lot of people followed it, and the big, you know, coats with the shoulder pads and the whole thing. So we have one more track coming up, which is the title track from the song Purple Rain, which originally, when it was written, was over 11 minutes. And Prince had approached Stevie Nicks to ask her if she would help him with creating some of the vocals for that song. And she was so intimidated by the length and sort of the epicness of this particular track that she turned him down. She said, "You're on your own there, Prince. You're doing this one yourself." So stay tuned for Purple Rain, which is coming up. But before we end our show here at The Score, as always, we have some parting thoughts from Margo. So Margo, what do you think about Purple Rain?
Okay. I want to talk about the effect of Prince's work. Believing that there's no separation between Prince's performance, his sporting, his undulating body, and his pulsating music, the work becomes an energized force charging through a liquid universe, sounding a multitude of voices that seem to be at opposite gender poles and blasting an array of instruments and effects. This all converges into a single life drama, having an ultimate rapport with itself. It's kind of like watching a cell swimming in saliva under a microscope. You think that any minute, without having to couple with anything else, the cell will produce a new life form. Except, as you experience it further, you sense it doesn't want to. It doesn't have to. It's enough to be pleasure itself. Until next month, be good to yourself, be better to your neighbor, and before you do anything, make sure you know the score. Thank you.
Think you better close it. Let me guide you.